This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I trust your heart has been stirred like mine. All the things you've been hearing, I'm excited God's here. If it wouldn't be for all the doors that God has opened, and I just stand in awe at what God has done, and that's why I'm here. I'm blessed and challenged by this opportunity to talk to you. I have a message I want you to hear. It's a message of hope. It's not a message of doom. It's a message that I want you to hear. If you have your book, open it to pages 35 and 36. You'll get a chance to write some things down there. If you like notes, scribble as fast as you can. If not, I'm hoping within a week or two to have these slides up on my website and that you could go back and take better notes. So don't get frustrated. Listen if you have to choose between listening and taking notes. Our title says that there's a problem, but I hope you also hear there's hope. That's what I feel. There's a picture there, and it looks like a tsunami is coming in. A tsunami is just a tidal wave that's coming in, sweeping over everything. That's what I think of. Sexual addiction is like a tsunami. That because it's so powerful and all-inclusive. It overwhelms us before we can prepare. Fill in the blanks if you gotta have a chance. Our world has changed so much in the last 70 years. Can you imagine a world, what the world was like 70 years ago? There was not even an explicit monthly magazine. That happened about not quite 70 years ago. But the other thing that's happened is that porn has gone from being still images to explicit acts that depict sexual acts. That's a big deal. Then the internet came along in the mid-90s. That's 25 years ago. Probably most of us weren't early adopters, but I'll tell you, all the young people here have internet right up there with food and water. Then there's the smartphone. The smartphone has changed our world. I got my first flip phone not so long ago, maybe 10 years ago, but the world continues to change. And there's a lot of, it can be a powerful tool, but it can also be a source of incredible destruction. 2008, the broadband internet made it possible for with such speeds so that you can watch one explicit movie right after another. First exposure to pornography is becoming younger and younger. Nowadays, they're saying first exposure is probably 8 or 10 years of age. I'm here to tell you that first exposure to pornography, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're a boy or a girl, is incredibly powerful, and it's sexual abuse. Today, we can hide pornography without much risk of being exposed. And my appeal is to those of you who are my age. I'm 64. There's a lot of us older people who just are tempted to say, these young people who are struggling, what's their problem? I made it, why can't they make it? Maybe you feel pretty fortunate because you are doing well. My guess is that more than one of you who did well before you got a smartphone are struggling now. But I want to say, men my age and older, my age, please understand the world is very, very different than it was when you and I were small. May the Lord forgive you if you are out saying, what's your problem? I made it, you can too. In addition to sexual addiction being like a tsunami that threatens to overwhelm us, sexual addiction is like internal bleeding because it's hidden, it's silent, and we may not even notice what's happening until it's too late. There are people all around you who are, their spiritual blood pressure is dropping and dropping and dropping, and you don't see it. They dress the same way, and you think everything is okay until it's too late. Maybe you're here and you're saying, I don't think that's that big a problem with us. I'm not going to fight about statistics because it doesn't do any good. My conviction is that our Anabaptist statistics about sexual addiction won't be accurate until it's safe to say, I have a problem, I need help. It's so shameful for us to admit that we struggle that we would never lie about anything else, but we don't know what else to do but to say, no, I don't struggle. There's evangelical statistics out there that are scary. And they're not that much different than the unchurched people. I'm here to say that my guess is that our statistics are a little bit better. But I'm scared. I'm really scared when we hear those statistics that say 60 to 70% of the men are watching pornography. You look at the people in your church and around you and you say, it can't be. When you hear that 30% of the women under 30 are watching pornography, you say, it can't be. And I get that. We're quiet about this because it seems like it couldn't be. But I'm here to say that we must open our eyes. John C. Anabaptist represents you and me. And it's the idea that says sexual bondage isn't that big a deal among us. Not like those people out there. So we can safely kind of look the other way. It's awkward. It's yucky. We don't want to talk about it. And so we say, we can ignore it and it won't affect our constituency. It won't affect the congregations and the constituencies that we represent. It won't affect us. There won't be that much loss. I say, whoa. I say, there is tremendous loss. We are only now beginning to understand how serious this is. It is not only a tsunami, which is big and bold, it is a hemorrhage that is quietly sapping the people around us. And if we're not ready, we're going to lose our people in droves. Mark my words. Maybe you're asking, what would Jesus do with people who are messed up? I'll give it to you. Sexual addiction, talking about lust, talking about pornography, talking about masturbation, talking about acting out with other people, it makes you feel yucky and you don't know what to do with it. I'm here to say that Jesus wasn't afraid of being contaminated by getting too close to other people. I love what happens in Luke 7. Jesus is invited to Simon's house. Simon is a Pharisee who clearly is checking Jesus out. He's not about to wash Jesus' feet or to give him the customary kiss because he's checking to see whether this man is for real or not. This is a trap. And so this woman comes in. I'm sure that she's a woman who had talked to Jesus before, or she would have never dared to come in there. But Jesus had treated her differently. Jesus gave her hope that you can change. And she is in tears, and she's saying, thank you, Jesus. So she comes in there, she makes a commotion, and everybody is saying, what's going to happen now? Doesn't this man know what kind of a woman she is? And Simon says, it's all over with. I know this man is not legitimate, because if he were, he would avoid the woman, right? And Jesus said, wrong. I know what you're thinking. I love this woman. She's worthy of being pursued. And I care about her. It's popular in church to stay away from contaminated people, but that's not what Jesus does. Jesus is the good shepherd, and he pursues people if there's enough of them, right? Wrong. Jesus will go out and pursue 1%. Can we do any less? If you're here saying, I know the people in my church, I don't think there's that many that are needy, you have no idea how many people in your church are struggling, your peers. But even if it's just 1%, Jesus is saying, I go after those people, will you go after them? I want you to wrestle with me. What, if we had time, I'd let you answer this question. What is the underlying message of silence? I think it says, one of the things it says is that you, it's not safe to be here. It's not safe to talk about it. One of the things that we hear, and God forgive us, is that we deal with sexual addiction harshly so that people will go underground and hide better because it feels good. But we shouldn't be a museum. We should be a hospital where people can be honest about what's happening inside and dare to come forward. God forgive us if our churches are places where you have to pretend that you're doing okay when you're not. And sadly, there's no sexual addiction redemption stories because nobody dares to talk and nobody dares to come clean. I want people like you to be able to say, that's where I was, but I'm free now. And when you say those words, people, nobody will say anything, and you'll think, I shouldn't have said that. But people will seek you out when you're by yourself, and they'll say, tell me more. I want to know. Your message, the message that you should give them is, sexual bondage is the hardest thing to get free from. Those who've had both a drug addiction and a sexual addiction will say, drug addiction is so much easier, but sexual addiction is harder yet. You need to say, freedom from sexual addiction is worth it. That's what God wants for you. We need to be saying, you're not alone. We get it. We'll walk with you. We all struggle to some extent. And this is the exciting thing. I can't keep quiet about this. If you make progress, if you come to have victory in your moral purity, you are facing things that you haven't ever faced before, and you're going to be a better person than ever before. I can't say that loudly enough. And sexual addiction, having victory over that, changes not just your life, it changes everybody else's life around you. Samuel Perry, his conclusion after doing a 6-year study with 3,000 people, he said, Fill in the spaces. Any porn use is associated with declines in religious commitment and behavior, like going to church and prayer, and an increase in religious doubts. That makes sense, doesn't it? Look at this slide. He very clearly says there's just no question. If you're more involved, the more you're involved with pornography, and we'll just, for Anabaptists, I'll just add lustful thoughts, masturbation, the more porn, the less service in the church. And since this is a missions conference, I'm going to say the less available you are for missions. I'm going to tell you a story now. One of the men that I worked with contacted me, and he said, "Arthur, I used to watch YouTube, but I got scared when I started to think about doing what I was watching." And I worked with him. He did the hard work. And then one day he said, "Arthur, I'm going to volunteer to our mission board." He jumped through a lot of hoops to get the clearance to be able to offer. But that man is now in the mission field. He was smart enough to say, "I can't go on the mission field with where I'm at, but I get to see people who are changing." Look at that. Never or rarely, this is what he discovered. This wasn't Anabaptist, but I'm sure it's a lot the same. If you never or rarely watch porn, he said there's a 33% chance one in three is going to volunteer to help out in church, teach a Sunday school class, or do something. But when it's down to porn every month, down to one in 10. Every week, one in 20. Porn daily, almost nothing. Why? The more frequently somebody watches porn, the less available they're going to be for the church. Why? You know why. You feel shameful. You feel like you're hiding. You feel like if they only knew what I'm doing when nobody's watching, who knows what they would do with me. I want to spend a few minutes here talking about sexual abuse, about what the Bible teaches. That isn't my primary job, but I just want to make sure that you know that I care deeply about holiness. My goal, the goal that I'm shooting for with the guys that I work with, is no lustful thoughts, no masturbation, no porn, and no acting out with other people. We don't do it perfectly, but they're doing it very well. I'm excited. My guess is that you know all about this stuff. You could answer the questions. I want to say, number one, God is very clear about sexual sin. There's no doubt. God gives grace to help us keep his commandments. They're not overwhelming. They're not burdensome. 1 Corinthians 6 makes it very plain that sexual sin is an eternal destiny issue. What does that mean? Maybe it doesn't show up right away, but if you keep drinking from that stream, if you keep going down that path, you're going to prove that Dr. Samuel Perry is right. You can't love God and walk down that path. You know what Matthew 5 says, but I'll say it the way I heard a pastor say, and it profoundly impacted me. He said, ask this question: if I did what I'm thinking about in my head, would it be sin? If it would be sin, then thinking about it is sin. That's what Jesus said. Think about Samson. There's a profound verse at the end of one of those three chapters that talks about him. And it says he was a judge for 20, you know what happened at the beginning. He had his problems with women. And then for 20 years, he went silent. For 20 years, he was a judge in Israel. And then his life fell apart. Think about Solomon. Solomon, if you read his prayer, and if you think about the way he started out, you say, this man loves God, and I agree with you. But if Solomon can't handle 1,000, the variety of 1,000 sexual experiences, I know you can't either. Forgive me for saying this, but it's so much easier to have 1,000 sexual experiences now. And it will ruin your life like it ruined Solomon's wife, Solomon's life. Here's another slide. We need to flee. If we don't flee, we're going to warm up to what we know is sin, because we can, yeah. Sexual sin, 1 Corinthians 6:18 says, sexual sin is different than other kinds of sin. See, God planned that the sexual act be something profoundly bonding between a man and his wife, and that it be beautiful. And the Bible clearly says it is beautiful. But you know what happens? When you start doing that with pixels or with people who aren't your wife, your world comes apart. God gave these instructions to protect us, not to torture us. God forgive you. If you are griping, if you are chafing because you want to be able to watch more stuff, because you feel tied down, because if you could do what you wanted to, you'd be free. The God of the Bible knows exactly what you need. And when he says, no sex outside of marriage, no thoughts, and no actions, he's not there to punish you. He's there to say, this is the way to life. Now, it's true. It's true that unwanted sexual behaviors feel good. I give that to you. But it destroys you. I want to tell you about what I do, because I want other people to do what I'm doing. I mentor men 1 hour a week on Zoom, and I love what I'm doing. I would never go back to. In July of last year, I finally weaned myself off of my day job as my opportunity to minister to people became greater and greater. The man on your right is another depiction of me, but it represents the men that I work with. I get to see them come from a very broken place. And as we talk every week, and they do the homework assignments between times, they change. I am so excited. I did the figure a little while ago. I've had done this 725 hours with 31 conservative Anabaptist men. I thought I was going to work with someone who wasn't Anabaptist, and then he decided this wasn't for him. And I'm going to tell you a few facts about the men that I work with. A lot of the men that I work with were exposed to pornography at a very young age. I'm talking about 8, 10, 12. They got into masturbation and pornography. I'm telling you this because this is the kind of picture that I see. And then I get to see them walk in freedom. And then there's pornography. And then there's this, I call it the indulge, shame, resolve, where they They do it, and then they say, oh, what was I thinking? This is horrible. I love God. And they feel this internal clash, and then they say, never again, until the next time. And the problem is that it gets worse with time. These men can't get free alone. Maybe you, with a little bit of hard work because you didn't get in very deep, maybe. But the kind of freedom that I see and the kind of changed people they become, you can never do by yourself, hiding, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And I consistently see them feeling weak and disconnected from God. And it makes sense, doesn't it? Now listen to this figure. I figured it out just a couple days ago. More than half of the men that I work with came to me reporting that they struggle with sexual acts that are shameful less than once every 2 weeks. And yet they experience those things. A bunch of my guys struggled with pornography almost every day. But I'm here to say, regardless whether you're in the, it's just every 2 weeks, or it's every month, regardless whether you're in that camp or in the, I really am slipping and I'm at a bad place and I'm scared and I don't know what's going to happen next. Regardless which of those two camps are in, check me out. See if that doesn't describe you. You feel guilt and distance from God, and you're isolating yourself from other people. Why wouldn't you isolate yourself from other people? Because you don't want them to know about what you're doing. I have men who are over 30 years old who would love to get married, but they know they're in no shape to get married. I'm excited to say that they're moving toward marriage. I'm coaching them and I'm saying, with the kind of progress that I see, I think you're going to be ready to dare to reach out to a woman, because they are getting to the place where they have nothing to hide. And then there's men who are married. More than half of the, right at half the people that I'm working with are married, and about half of the people aren't married. But the men predictably report that I'm not that close to my wife. But as they grow and mature and change, things change. So this is the same slide, except I pushed those two columns over, and now I'm adding the third column. They now have an alive relationship with God and others. They're beginning to experience what life is like. They have healthy relationships with men and women because I have nothing to hide. And I am learning to live in freedom. I'm sorry, I want to back up. They have self-confidence. Why do they have self-confidence? Because they are now winning at the hardest battle they have ever had. There's a lot of people out here who don't have self-confidence, because there's nothing like failing in this most intimate part of your life. There's nothing like that to say, I'm going to stop now, this is the last time, and then you jump over that, and then you jump over that, and you just say, I love God, but I can't stop myself. What's wrong with me? And that destroys your relationship with God. We need to go faster. The last 32 months, I've been working with people, and I want to say that you're not going to be able to get out of this by yourself. Lasting change is possible. I see it all the time, and I'm so excited about my job. A balanced program works. I meet with them once a week for an hour, and we review where they're at and how it's going, and then I say, What are your goals for the next week? And we set goals. They're doing online training, and it works. Anabaptists are willing to pay you for your time if you're willing to, if they think you can help them. We Anabaptists want stuff to be free. I like to tell people I'd love to do to help you for free because that's what I did for 30 years on the mission field because somebody was paying me. Now I quit my day job and I tell them, if you want me to work, help you for free, I'll have to do a full-time job and I won't have time to help you anyway. Besides, I want you to have skin in the game and it helps you to get all the good out of it that you can. And the other thing I want you to know is that you don't have to have a horrible sexual addiction story to be able to help people. My mentor, a non-Anabaptist, said, Arthur, I'll train you, but I don't know if anybody will listen to you because you don't have much of a colorful sexual addiction story. I said, that may be, but I feel like God called me and here I go. People come to me. I get to help them. I see them change. I don't know how often. Sometimes it's more than once a day. I go out to my wife in the kitchen and I say, Lil, you won't believe what happened. Things are happening. There's breakthroughs and they're saying, and they're connecting the dots and they're understanding that it's not just that I'm doing bad things because I'm wicked. It's because sexual addiction has become my go-to to clock out from life and to hide. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to spend much time here because the clock is not cooperating with me. I timed myself this morning. I just want to... I'm going to skip. Basically, you have all this information at the bottom of page 36. But the one thing I want you to notice is that back in the bookstore, there are business cards that I want you to pick up. Just go there and pick up as many business cards as you can handle. I think I have 1,000 here. Pick up as many as you can use. This is for other people. Don't worry about people say, oh, he must have struggles. That's why he's picking up a card. You just get a bunch of them and everybody will know that you're getting them for other people. Okay? Martin Luther King Jr. is famous for having said, made a 17-minute speech where he says, I have a dream. I get to say what my dream is. I'm dreaming of a host of volunteer and part-time mentors who dive into the battle and say, I want to help. I'm dreaming about 20 full-time mentors among us, and the us is people like you and me. We need more than that. But I'm daring to dream of 20 men who grow little by little. They dive in because they care and they hear me talk and they say, if he can do it, maybe I could too. I'm dreaming about 20. And I'm hoping, I'm just finishing up with a group of 7 church leaders, and it's been a wonderful time together. We meet twice a month of an evening, and my goal was that they would be able to, confidently help someone else that comes to them. And I think that's happening. My dream is that there will be 5,000 ex-bench warmers, you understand what I mean, who are now free because of, I can only work with 15 or 20 people. But if there's a whole bunch of you who are part-time and maybe I can talk you into being full-time and Anabaptists are willing to pay you if they're convinced that you can help them. And when those 5,000 people are free, the world will be different. And our ministries that need help are going to be staffed. And these men are going to be able to concentrate and be able to move forward. My 3-year closer to home dream is, I'm dreaming that there will be a mentor or two in every church where when someone struggles, they know who to go to, and they will be received with graciously with respect, because this is a normal part of Christian discipleship. And like Jethro, remember what happened with Jethro? Jethro talked to Moses and said, "You're wearing yourself out." My guess is that there's church leaders here who know about needs in your church, and you don't reach around and you just say, "There's no way I can do this." But could you, would you assign someone in your church who's gifted and say, "We'll pay your books, we'll pay for your training. We need to do something because the tsunami is coming, and if we're not ready, we're going to lose a lot of people." The Jethro story is a story where he says, "Moses, if you don't get help, you're not going to be able to go up on the mountain. Moses, if you don't get help, you're not going to be able to prepare on Sunday morning to preach. You need other people who will come alongside you, the tens, the 50s, the hundreds, and the thousands." And what's going to happen? Those people are going to grow. Those people are going to be powerfully changed because they're reaching out and helping other people. That's my dream for you. Will you pray with me? Heavenly Father, by your design and plan, we get to be alive at this time in history. Thank you. This is a time of unprecedented opportunity. If we're willing to move forward, you'll open the Red Sea for us. Father, we have been afraid to face this monster of sexual sin among us. Forgive us. We have looked the other way when we should have been offering help. Forgive us. We have been proud. We've assumed that sexual sin among us is not that big a deal. Forgive us. Based on their own experience, some of us have lost hope that purity and victory in this area is possible. Forgive us. We have pretended. We have gasped and gossiped when other men's sins became public so that everyone would know that we're not struggling with this kind of stuff. Forgive us. We have avoided getting too close to those who were floundering. We have avoided contamination. We've been afraid of what people will think if we get involved. Forgive us. Father, may you call people among us to mentor. I pray that you'll equip gifted men and women among us to rescue those who are trapped in clear ways so they can't misunderstand. May these guides become instruments of your grace so that strugglers are set free to thrive and flourish. May we be willing to learn how to rescue both those among us and those who are still outside our circles. May those, I talked about mentors now, may those who are floundering now hear a message of hope that someone is willing to walk with them. Not a condoning, not a lowering the bar that says that what you call sin isn't sin anymore, but an empowering that shows us the way to genuine freedom. May the men and women who are trapped now in sexual sin experience such growth and freedom and change that they become engines of growth and change in our churches, our communities, and reaching out to the watching world. May these strugglers become so free that they make a profound difference in the kingdom, so that these Ezekiel 37 bones become a mighty army for good and for the kingdom. And as sexual sin becomes more and more deeply entrenched all around us, as sexual sin is normalized and dismissed as inconsequential, as the consequences of sexual sin take root and destroy lives all around us, may our churches be dynamic engines of evangelism because we offer a safe place to be honest and to get clean from the plague of sexual sin. May it be for your glory. Amen. Just this thing. I was going to say it earlier. I have four requests. I want people here to say, to step forward and say, I'll mentor. I want people here who say, I'm struggling. You described me, to get help. I want people here who say, I can't do any of that stuff, but I can pray. And number four, I'm looking for people who can't pay what it costs for my time to be able to sponsor, to be able to give scholarships. Those are four ways that you can help. Blessings to you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.